Hey, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the How to Become an Elite Financial Advisor podcast. I wanted to extend a personal invitation. If you had questions about coming to our How to Charge Live event in April of 2025, that you would go to howtocharge.live.com. That's howtocharge.live.com. Click on a button there that says schedule the call. And I'd love to answer any questions you have about coming to our event in April. It will sell out, but if you have questions, I want to answer them as quickly as possible so you can get your seat to that event. I look forward to seeing you here with us in April. And now, enjoy today's episode.
Great to be with you today. Sten Morgan here. I'm excited about today's podcast. I'm going to dive into individual questions from listeners about their personal practices. I love diving into questions with advisors, not because I have the answers to every problem or question, but also because I benefit as I talk about it out loud. So what I love about these questions is that I'll try to answer as specifically as I can, as if this advisor was sitting here with me, but also talk about kind of the bigger question behind the question, because a lot of these will impact all of our practices. So first question, this comes from Keith. What value do I provide if a client has already been well served? In my experience, there's a lot of clients, there's always a need. Potentially. There's a reason they're in your office. Most of the time, if a client's really well served, you know, there's a good chance they're not even meeting with another advisor. But let's assume you do get an opportunity with a client and you dive into their plan. And maybe for some reason, they just thought there was more opportunity for them. And you do a deep dive into their plan. You get some data. Maybe it's in meeting one. You fact find. You go back to meeting two. And you're sitting there thinking to yourself, This is a pretty good plan. There's nothing dramatic that I can point out that might create urgency for them to take action. I've found myself in this situation a few times, and younger advisor Sten was kind of scrambling because I wanted the client. And so maybe the client wasn't a good fit. Maybe the situations they were dealing with, their professional team and their current advisor had more expertise than me. So I think first I would try to discern, is there just a skill set that I don't have that this client truly needs? Maybe that's a situation where we just say, hey, you're in good shape. There's really nothing to change. I'm not the best fit for you moving forward. At times, the worst thing we can do for our practice is bring on a client that's not a good fit, that maybe our sales skills are so developed that we can get somebody to say yes, but it's not really based on the ability for us to add true value moving forward. So in one scenario, you just say, hey, you're in good shape. You know, based on my current expertise, I do not have anything else to give you. That's honest, and you move on to another client. Ideally, we hit home runs. We don't have a lot of clients that question why they're working with us or why they pay us for what we do. We want to truly add a lot of value. On the other hand, it could be that you're just not communicating your value well enough, or you don't even understand your value well enough to communicate it confidently to a prospect. So to Keith, if Keith was sitting here with me, because I know Keith, I would tell him that there's a good chance that you can position your system or the fact that you're proactive and you communicate more than other advisors. You could have a client that has taken advantage of really great planning opportunities in the past, whether by chance or they had a good advisory team around them, but they could prefer to work with you because you communicate more clearly. You meet with them more often. And so for me, if this was a client for me, I would shift more towards, hey, I know I can add value moving forward. I'm confident this client is in better hands with me than maybe other advisors. I'm going to step out in that confidence and present my process really cleanly and clearly. Because at the end of the day, it's up to the client to decide if they want to work with us or not. And if you present well, don't create anything, don't create urgency where there's no urgency to be had, and the client says, this sounds great, let's move forward. If you can provide the same thing as another advisor, but your process is cleaner and therefore the client has more confidence in their financial plan, which in turn means they're going to follow their plan more clearly, I would confidently communicate that. So great question, Keith. As all of us face that, especially if you're in the financial planning world and you're saying, I need to come with big ideas to impress people, sometimes it doesn't need to be big ideas. Sometimes it's your confidence and the fact they know that you have a system and you're professional. That could be the reason they want to do business with you. All right, next question. How do you whiteboard via Zoom or in a client's home? So for this advisor, their current firm, the broker-dealer they're with, does not allow them to use the whiteboard feature on their remote software. So we're big advocates of compelling communication. I look back in my career, and there's a lot of opportunity missed in the first 5-6 years of my career because I was not communicating clearly to the client. They might have left my office saying that sounded good, but like, why would I take action? Why would I prioritize that thing? And so I believe every advisor should have a superpower in communication, because if the only thing standing between a client need and the client taking action is our ability to explain the situation and show them how big of a deal it is for them to take action, I think we should take that pretty seriously. So in this case, what if Craig's hands are tied? He's meeting with a client over Zoom. He's not allowed to use whiteboarding, the technology built into it. You could put a whiteboard behind you. I mean, I don't think any BD would stop you from, you know, if they're letting you send reports and different things, illustrating ideas. So quick, easy way would be get good lighting and set your camera up in a way to where there's a whiteboard behind you. Practice it so it makes it, you know, you know if it looks really clean and easy. If at the end of the day, you're saying they're not allowing me to look at a whiteboard, they're not allowing me to use whiteboard software, I would go to them and say, okay, what options do we have? I've dealt with so many compliance departments where I got a few no's at first, probably because what I was asking was not in the normal process of what they were doing. But what I knew and what I brought to them was, but a lot of advisors are doing this already. So it's not that it's illegal. You're saying right now you're just not, you don't have the capacity to evaluate it and make it an option for us. These are things I'm allowed to do with them in person in a conference room, which is whiteboard. So can I set up a whiteboard behind me? So I just get really curious on, it's not a yes or a no. It's, hey, how can we make this happen? Not if, because your ability to communicate and illustrate, you know, they're letting you show illustrations to clients all the time. I would push on this one a little bit, because for the advisors to get really good at communicating and illustrating, their business is transformed because clients are getting a dramatically different experience with them, where most advisors, and I did this for years, are just talking at a client. They're saying, I'm Sten, I'm an advisor, hope you want to work with me. Here's a bunch of information, sign here. What we advocate for is be generous with your ideas, coach and educate them from the first meeting as quickly as you can. And a big part of that is, how do you illustrate? People learn visually. You know, most people learn more effectively visually than audibly. So I push on that one, Craig. We have yet to run into a firm that kind of totally says, no, you can't do any of that. So push on that a little more, because I would not want you to just move away from communicating in a better, more clear way. Because advisors of the future have to do it that way. All right, next question. Technique for low to middle class clients. This is from Raymond. I know Raymond. What is the technique that can help nearly everyone? My market has a net worth of less than 400K. Everyone knows about Roth conversions, but what helps low to middle class clients usually in their 50s to 60s that are not business owners? So if you are charging a financial planning fee at this point, or even if you don't charge, but you have a great planning process that you use to attract and convert clients, there are certain clients where you'll walk in and the clouds will part. You know, there's this sound of there's so much opportunity that you look so amazing to them so quickly, and they want to sign up as quickly as they can. Those are great clients. There's a lot of them out there that need that much help. But there's also a lot of clients that it's really a combination of smaller ideas that show them the full value of what you can bring to the table. And so if you do have non-business owner clients, we work with a lot of business owners. There's a lot of opportunity with business owners. But let's assume a non-business owner, nearing retirement, W-2 employee, what things can you do for them? There's a lot of things you can do planning-wise. You know, Roth conversions could be one. What about early IRA withdrawals? We've had this with some prospects before, to where we run a spreadsheet and essentially say, if we can, starting at 60, potentially, taking out a little bit from your IRA account every year, here's the long-term benefit with these assumptions. To a 50-year-old, that's not around the corner. It's probably something they should be aware of, though. But that idea, if you can quantify it, because you always need to put a number to it because that's what creates urgency. If I sit down with somebody and spend an hour meeting with them and I show them this great presentation, at the end of the day, I say, this is going to save you $40 this year. Yeah, there's a chance they're frustrated because it's like, what's up with the buildup? That's a small problem, not a big enough problem for me. You have the Irma tax. There's a chance you show them, hey, when you get to this point in time, we could challenge this tax because they based it off of income in prior years and your income may be lower now. So Raymond, I would say that those are two examples of strategies that you can really focus on developing a way to present really frequently and routinely. You may not know up front with a prospect to what degree it's going to help them, or really they may have not given you all the information you need to apply it to their situation. But as advisors, we can be storytellers. So if I meet with Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I've never met them before. They didn't give me a bunch of information, but I know they're 55 years old, income of, you know, $100,000, $150,000. What I can do in a meeting with them is just share three great ideas. I can walk them through early withdrawals, and I can illustrate that on the whiteboard and say, if we work together, this is something we're going to look at in the future. And let's assume that your income is this. Let's assume that you take out this much withdrawal. So I'm prefacing everything with, I don't know this yet, but this could be true. And now I've just shared an idea with them. I don't know how they're going to apply it. I don't know how their situation is going to change between age 55 and 60. They could win the lottery. They could start a business and sell a business. But based on what I know today, I'm going to teach them something that they probably haven't been walked through before. The Irma tax. That's another one where you can say, hey, did you know that there's an extra tax at this point in time based on this income? If you work with the right advisor, here's how we can mitigate that. And so, Raymond, I would come up with 3 to 4 ideas that may not sound exciting or groundbreaking, but to a client, they are. To most people, they don't understand these things that we at times can call, you know, basic ideas, that they're not exciting enough to convert a client. But if you show me 2 or 3 of these in a meeting and you put some story and some numbers to it, and it saves me, you know, thousands of dollars a year in retirement, that is enough to get somebody's attention. All right, next question here is from Eric. My meetings have improved drastically since implementing EAN's teachings. Where I feel I'm lacking still is creating urgency for a client to act. The risk we run as advisors as we develop our communication skills is that we get people excited and we get them to the 1 yard line. But what I see a lot of advisors missing out on is the true conversion, the thing that pushes a client to take action. And this plagued me in my young advisor career because I was confident. I knew I was driven. I knew I wanted to be a good advisor for these people. So I was excited about the meeting, but I didn't spend enough time trying to get myself in the client's shoes, realizing they have busy lives. They have things that are coming up. As soon as they walk in my office, they might get a text and their world and their day gets turned upside down. Somehow, if appropriate, I need to make sure the things I'm telling them they should do rank in their top 2 or 3 things. We don't make things up, though. We don't create urgency where there is no urgency in order to sell a product. But if I meet with a client and I tell them, you need to change this insurance policy because it's an increasing term. If you level it out, you'll save $300 a year. And then that same meeting, I share another idea about a tax strategy where they can recharacterize some of their income and it'll help them save $5,000 a year. And then I have another idea that saves them another $5,000 a year. All of a sudden, those ideas there save them around $14,000 a year. And I say, client, in the next 10 years, if you continue to implement these ideas, not only will this save you $14,000 in 1 year, but over 10 years, that's $140,000. So I took a couple ideas or a few ideas that on their own may not be enough to push my planning items, the things that I think are important for them, into their top 3 list of life decisions they need to make soon. And this is where advisor communication can be the biggest obstacle. It is our responsibility to clearly educate them on where they stand now and to paint the picture of where they could go in the future and show them, here are the steps you can take and why they should be important to you. And so, Eric, as I read this, I would say quantify, quantify, quantify. Bring up the idea. Even if you don't have all the information, put some assumptions in the story. Let's assume your tax rate is 30% in the future. Let's assume that your business makes this and you put this much money in your SEP. It is up to us to paint the future picture of what could be so that they see it as a priority. And so, Eric, where you could be falling short is you're getting the person in the door, you're sharing great ideas, but you're not quantifying and finalizing enough urgency for the client to say, wow, this is important. Okay. All right, next question. If you only had insurance products at your disposal, how would you answer the question, what do you do? In our live event that we hold here in Nashville, well, at least once a quarter, we spend a chunk of time talking about how do advisors answer the question, what do you do? There's two sides to that. One, does the client understand enough to have curiosity and to understand, wow, this person could really help me and solve my problems? The other side of it is that most advisors do not have a really good answer to this question. And I would say, well, that's because the advisor doesn't know truly what their value is. If someone says, hey, Stan, what do you do? And I'm like, I manage money. Oh, that's it? Or if I was to say, I help business owners pay less taxes and make much more confident financial choices. Oh, how do you do that? So my answer doesn't stop there. My answer then goes into, for example, here's how I help somebody else. I'm going to tell a little bit of a story, a quick one, so they can put themselves in the story and therefore relate to like, oh, this is who this person works with. And finally, I'm going to put a number to how much I help somebody else. So hi, I'm Stan. I help business owners pay less in taxes. For example, I worked with a business owner last week that was unaware of the QBI deduction, and they were miscoding a lot of their income to themselves. And so we made sure with their CPA, they paid themselves a reasonable salary, and then the rest of the pass-through income they had in their business was able to get a 20% tax deduction. But I don't stop there. For this client, that saved them about $20,000 this year. If they do that same strategy over the next 10 years, that one idea saves them $200,000. So they know who I help, they know how I help people, but they also realize, wow, Sten doesn't do small things, he helps people with big ideas. I don't even know if that client's going to use that idea, if they're even going to become a client, but painting that picture is much more compelling than, hi, I'm a financial advisor. I hope you like me more than your current person. Let's do business together. I spent so many years frustrated that people weren't taking action until I was finally able to say, well, Sten, that's a you problem. Like, how do you focus on the thing you can control and convert more of the right people? So in this case, if it's insurance, be honest. Don't try to smoke and mirrors. You know, the idea of like private bank, billionaire ideas, you know, those things are interesting from a marketing standpoint, but if they create confusion and we're walking around really what we do and what we offer, is I would say I help clients manage risk. And then I would have a story about what if you mismanage risk. For example, clients that owned restaurants during COVID, something happened they never thought would happen. And it potentially caused their business to shut down. A really overlooked part of people's financial plan is their risk management. Are we prepared for the unknowns? The unknowns that we hope never happen. But if they do, we're not looking at each other saying, well, we've just lost everything. So I think there's a very compelling story. And I know advisors that just say, my lane is insurance. And I do it really well because it's so important. So try not to shy away from that. When I was young and I got into the business and I was with an insurance BD, I didn't think insurance was the most exciting or sexy part of the business. And so I would say I'm a financial advisor. I would not let on to the person that most likely my solution at this point was somehow going to be insurance related. And so if you have hesitancy about the products you provide, you know, that's some head trash you need to unpack and either get much more confident in it or pivot to something that you have more belief in. But John, I think there's a really compelling answer to an insurance advisor when they say, what do you do? And you say, you know, I help people's financial plans not fall apart. Oh, how do you do that? So spend some time really crafting an answer you feel good about, but also would pique the interest of a prospect. Next question here, I'll run through these last few a little faster. What is my response when somebody asks me, what do you do? And so I have a few responses depending on the audience I'm with. If I'm at a worksite education event of W-2 employees, that would be different than my answer for business owners. The main takeaway here, and I shared one with you about I help business owners pay less taxes, here's how I do that, and here's how much money I've saved people in the past. That is what we call our formula for answering what do you do. Tell them specifically who you serve, give them example of how you've served somebody, and then tell them the number or quantify the value of the help you provided somebody. That is the formula for a great answer to what do you do. And we teach on this. We spend an hour on this at our live event because once you craft this and actually believe it, the way this conversation comes up naturally will be much smoother, and much better received by prospects. So whatever your answer is, who do you work with specifically? Have two or three of these answers. How do you help those people? Give me a story. What's an example? And then what is the dollar value or the benefit that you've given to people in the past? That helps create the urgency. What are some resources you use for more tax strategies? So this is, again, something we teach a lot at our live event, that when advisors start shifting from selling product to actually being true advisors and actually getting paid for their time and ideas, there can be this pressure of, I just don't have all the ideas. And what we teach people is that centers of influence are no more. You have idea partners. All these professionals that we network with are experts in their field, and we're going to go to them and ask for ideas. So the most direct way is to go to CPAs, tax attorneys, and say, what are your best ideas? They love to talk about their profession. If you call and say, hey, I'd love to meet with you so you can send me business, those conversations usually are much different. I also sign up for CPA practices, CPA firm newsletters. There's so much great content out there that for my practice, I want a part of my energy to go to getting those ideas directly from people. That creates good relationships. But I also want to sign up for things. I want to find information from content creators that can be sent to me. And so when it comes to ideas, we always have a stream of ideas coming to Legacy. But our team, part of our culture, is we're also very curious. We're also going and trying to find these ideas proactively. All right, two more questions here. How do you best track and divide out revenue, fees, and commissions? All right, this is a good one. So this is kind of behind the scenes. We are all business owners. When it comes to having partners or sharing revenue, how do you do that? And I've seen hundreds of ways of doing this. I've seen advisors with spreadsheets with 50 rep codes. And while I think there was a method to the madness, I was like, I just wouldn't want to keep up with that. Like at some point it's distracting me from doing what I do best, which is getting the right clients in and serving my clients really well. So part of this, Ken, I would say start with simple and then figure out, is the long-term structure of your practice going to be equal partners? You may end up having a different structure for the partners than you do future advisors. So Legacy, for example, I have W-2 advisors. They get paid a salary for doing great work. I provide a lot of the leads for them, and they get bonused on attracting or closing new business. And so it's very streamlined, and they know, when they get a client and their book starts growing, where their base salary increases. They know when new assets, insurance cases, or planning clients come in, what they get bonused off helping close that business and manage it. So that's one area where the decision making is a little closer. That's something that I make for the firm, and everybody's on board with it. But when you have multiple people sitting at a table and you have multiple scenarios of how everyone can potentially interact with a client, that can be more complicated. I've seen back in the day where there was five parts of an engagement and each part of the engagement was worth 20%. I think it was who brought the prospect in, who closed the business, who designed it, who delivered it, and who serviced it, or something like that. I think that might kind of be rooted in the insurance broker-dealer world where I started. But more simple, that you could have a one-pager that for every client, you go through and you fill out who did what, and that's submitted with new business to your team, and then that's tracked somewhere. You could also say it's, if there's three partners, everything's a third, a third, a third, and then at the end of each quarter or end of each year, you go back and you audit it and do some way of kind of rebalancing it. So I don't have the answer for you. I'm sure as you're listening to this, if anybody out there feels like they've solved this and they have a great way of tracking and splitting commissions on a team of advisors that are more partners, please send it to us and we'll talk about it in a future episode or send it out to everybody. But I'd make it simple, something that doesn't distract from really what you do best, which is running your business and helping clients. And fair. I think at the end of the day, if everyone feels, in this month I won, in this month I maybe didn't produce as much, but it was kind of offset. Somehow you need to get something everybody's comfortable with and then go to work. My hope is you don't talk about this every month, every 2 months, that you can put something in place and evaluate it periodically. So great question. I don't think there's one thing we've all agreed to. It's kind of something that's always fluid, but it sounds like you're making good progress on it. All right, last question before we wrap up. How did you deal with pushback or changes in the way friends and family looked to you as you were building your business career and taking risk to shoot for something higher. How did you navigate through the lonely chapter where you no longer fit with everyone around you as you began to achieve success? And did you approach making new friends, connections that also had higher aspirations? This is from Zach. Zach, great question. Sounds like, you know, a good problem to some degree. When this started happening to me, it just revealed relationships around me that I needed to, you know, kind of do an audit of. We are all a result of the five people we spend our time with. And that's for better or worse. There's some studies that say a majority of the outcomes to the negative are directly tied to the people you spend your time with. And then it goes the opposite way. Majority of the positive outcomes in your life are tied to the people you surround yourself with. So I look back at times where I was at firms as an advisor in my 20s, you know, probably a little overconfident, but I think that's because I looked around and there was advisors that were 15, 20, 30 years older than me, and my business was already bigger than them. I was adding more clients. And so, you know, I feel like I had a right to be a little more confident because, hey, what I'm doing is working, and I did it at a fraction of the time as you did. But there was this kind of heavy effect that I wasn't being pushed or challenged to do even better, that in that pond, I almost took my foot off the gas because I was already outpacing everybody where I was. So there is an effect to that, that we have to be really careful around who we are spending our time with. For me, that just ended up being community with advisors. I wanted to make sure I was around advisors doing better than I was. So they were helping set the pace. They were challenging me. I spent a lot of time as a young advisor solving problems that I knew other people had already solved. But I was maybe not as abundant with my ideas. You know, the mentality of like, hey, advisors, let's all share it because there's plenty of information, plenty of clients out there for all of us. So, Zach, I challenge you. This is one reason we started the Elite Advisor Network, is for advisors to join that community and share openly. You know, I give my best stuff away. It's like, I have plenty of clients. You know, I'm not worried about somebody in our network taking one of my clients. There's so many people that need our help. So I love that you're aware of it. I challenge you to keep sitting in it. You're probably going to keep going through this as you level up your business, level up your mindset. But when you said the word kind of lonely in here, that hit home for me because I spent years in this business, you know, feeling alone, even at times challenged or advisors kind of rooting against me to be successful, even managers that felt challenged by me trying to push and grow a business. So sometimes you just have to change your environment. And if there's people that you're like, I can't change the environment, they're family or close friends, how do you reframe those relationships so that they're not holding you back or being this heavy weight on you all the time? So love that you're recognizing it. I think that's something we all go through. So I want to normalize that for all advisors. I still feel have days where I feel lonely, days where I feel, you know, as a business owner, it that's a lonely position. If you're choosing to run a business and deal with the challenges that come with that, you're putting yourself in a group of people it's a small group, and most people don't relate to the struggles we have with team members, with making payroll, with market conditions, with all the things that come with running a business. So part of that is, what can you do to mitigate the heaviness of that, but also learn to sit in it because it just is the way it is. So I've had to kind of work through that and settle in that place. But don't be alone. You know, call us, join the community. How can we all challenge each other to be better? All right, that was it. Those are the questions. We'll do another one of these episodes in the future. So if you have any questions that you want me to kind of brainstorm out loud with, shoot it over to us. Look forward to talking about it. Thanks.